From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A group of 29 parents were recently allowed to re-enter the United States after deportation, whose children remain in U.S. custody. The parents were among the thousands whose children were taken away from them by the Trump administration as part of its family separation policy last summer, and they were among an unknown number that were deported without their children. The group of 29 had traveled back to the border and remained at the Calexico port of entry and were initially told by Border Patrol that they were at capacity. Then, with the help of immigration attorneys, the parents were finally let in and processed. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen gave her first public testimony in front of the House Homeland Security Committee on Wednesday. Members of Congress questioned her about the Trump administration's family separation policy and whether children were held in cages. Also, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency is under fire over news that it kept a dossier on immigrant rights activists, journalists, and even lawyers working on the border immigration crisis. My guest is Nora Phillips, legal director and co-founder of the group Al Otro Lado. Welcome to the program, Nora.
Thank you so much for having me.
So your organization, I understand, was involved in helping this group of 29 people, these parents, be allowed back in across the U.S. border so that they could begin the process of reuniting with their children. Can you tell me a little bit about how that all transpired, how it was that they were finally allowed in, and what's happened to them now?
The parents were, as you stated, separated from their children as a result of the zero tolerance policy. They were sent back to Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, and the government did not propose any way to bring them back to the United States. So it was sort of left up to us to try to figure a way to get the parents from these pretty remote locations back to the United States, since the government in the separated families litigation said that it didn't have the resources to be able to do that. So the parents were applied for and were given humanitarian visas for transit in Mexico. They then went to Mexicali and presented themselves at the Calexico port of entry. There was a significant period of time where nobody knew if they were going to be processed or not. We heard, you know, the first thing we hear from Border Patrol is always capacity. So they said that they didn't have capacity for these parents. And after a very tense 12 hours, they finally began processing these parents who presented with claims for asylum. And there's many of them are still being detained, even though they were already separated once from their children. So That's the update as far as we are right now.
So they were let in, but they were kept in detention, and they still haven't managed to be reunited. Does anybody know where that particular group of parents' children are?
Well, some of the parents have been released. Others remain in custody, and the children are literally spread out all over the country. So Georgia, New York, kids and the parents are extremely far away from each other. So it's really been, I've been practicing for 12 years and I've never seen anything remotely close to anything on this scale in terms of mobilization and logistics to try to get these parents back.
In a case that the ACLU is litigating around the family separation, the government, I understand, was forced to give a number recently about how many parents were deported without their children. And the government said a total of 471. Is that the closest or the most accurate estimate we have? So that might mean that 29 group of people that your organization worked with are just a small subset of a larger group?
Yes. I don't really have a whole lot of faith in DHS's figures, particularly relating to separated families, given that every day it seems like there is another 1,000 kids in custody that they didn't know about. But I think it's quite fair to say that the parents that were able to make this journey with the assistance of attorneys, the assistance of, you know, somebody able to get them safe passage through Mexico legally with a visa, coordinate everything, it was just an absolutely massive undertaking. So for those parents who were unable to access those services, the vast majority of these parents are unrepresented, not here, and will never see their kids again.
So just to reiterate, the government separated these families, put away their children, took their children away, deported these parents, and then said, sorry, we cannot help undo the damage we've done. If these parents want to figure it out on their own, or if immigration attorneys like yourself or immigrant rights activists in the U.S. want to figure it out on their own and get their own resources, they can do so. And that's essentially how all of this transpired. The government just washed its hands off of the responsibility to bring these children back to the parents that they separated?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about these parents. I cannot imagine the determination that they are driven by to find their children. Any person who has a child can only imagine what it's like when your child is taken away from you and the lengths you would go to get your child back.
Yeah, I'm a parent, and there's nothing that would frighten me more than being separated from her. And then the manner in which these parents were separated from their children, with being told, no, you're going to see them again, just sign here. No, you're not going to be separated from your child. Just blatant lies, misinformation. These children are completely traumatized from the journey, the detention, the separation, and then the psychological mind games that are played all too often by ICE officials telling them your dad hasn't called. He doesn't care about you. He wants you to be given up for adoption. We've had situations where, I think one case, we left 17 messages for the ICE officer. We're representing the father, desperately trying to get in touch to find out, you know, how to get these families in communication with their children. And it's just ignored. So the level of dehumanization is absolutely astounding. I don't know how anybody with a child could, I don't know. It leaves me speechless, and I usually am not at a loss for words.
So rather than focusing on this government-wrought violence toward immigrants at the border, of course, all we hear about from President Trump and his supporters is the violence of immigrants at the border, and that real violence that's being done to immigrants is all too often being ignored. We had a very brief challenging of someone in power on Wednesday when we saw Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen for the first time being brought to testify publicly, largely as a result of Democrats now holding power in the House. Last year, Republicans apparently did not see fit to bring in the head of Homeland Security to find out about this family separation policy. What did you make of some of the things that she said, particularly when she kept denying that children had been held in detention and cages before being transferred to shelters, and that the idea of family separation wasn't a policy, it was just the result of existing laws?
It's a lie. It's just lies. I feel like sugarcoating it with its, you know, misinterpretation, or it's, you know, arguably, they're just lies. The policies, first of all, the family separation policy is absolutely a creation of the Trump administration. Families were being detained under the Obama administration in extremely large numbers, but they weren't being yanked apart from their children at the border. And this is a dramatic change in policy. The zero tolerance policy is predicated on this ramped up criminal charging for illegal entry. And because of the, which normally, you know, wouldn't happen before, you'd never see a 1325 for illegal entry. You rarely see those cases. The U.S. Attorney's Office didn't focus on them. It's a, you know, minor charge. I think it's actually a misdemeanor, and you just never see them prosecuted. And then with the zero tolerance policy, the way that they separated all the kids was to start charging every single parent escaping violence, trying to turn in at a port of entry, not able to do so, literally, you know, forced to enter unlawfully because all the legal options are literally made unavailable. Then they're criminally charged. And that is what allowed the government to separate these kids from their parents. This was not happening before. It was not. So this is absolutely, this is a policy that is created by the Trump administration that caused a suffering on a level that I can't even imagine, that's going to be played out over decades and decades with these little children's brains that have been irreparably damaged by this trauma. The kids were kept in cages. We know this. We saw it. We heard audio. So she's either a liar or she's horrible at her job. She has no idea and has no idea what's going on the ground. So when I hear that testimony, I just think of the clients that I've met and listening to stories about everything horrible that happened and seeing people with machete scars and spending an entire day scanning Honduran death certificates for all of the family members of my clients who've been murdered. And then they come to our doors. We're supposed to protect them as their neighbor, as humans. And instead, we rip them away from their kids, or their kids in cages, deport them. And a lot of the kids that got separated from their family, I mean, deportation as a form of a constructive termination of parental rights has been going on for quite a long time. And a lot of those children are never going to see their parents again. They're going to be swallowed up into the foster care system. They're going to be adopted out. It's, to me, very reminiscent of the residential school programs in Canada. Just trying to kind of, you know, it's genocidal what they're doing.
Well, let's actually play the exchange between Congressman Benny Thompson, who's the chair of the House Homeland Security Committee, and Kirstjen Nielsen and her attempt to sort of sidestep his question.
For the record, Madam Secretary, are we still using cages for children?
Sir, we don't use cages for children in the border facilities that you've been to. They were not made to detain children. As the children are processed through, they are in subparts of those facilities.
Madam.
Secretary? Yes, I'm now, being as clear as I can, sir. Respectfully, I'm trying to answer your question.
Yes or no, are we still putting children in cages?
To my knowledge, CBP never purposely put a child in a cage, if you mean a cage like this.
Purposely or whatever, are we putting children in cages as of today?
Children are processed at the border facility stations that you've been at. Some of
the areas. Seen the cages. I just want you to admit that the cages exist.
Sir, they're not cages.
What are they?
Areas of the border facility that are carved out for the safety and protection of those who remain there while they're being processed. If we have two gangs, we separate them into separate areas of that facility.
No.
If we have a father and daughter, we separate that from another son.
We're not going to go through the semantics. Now, I saw the cyclone fences that were made as cages, and you did too. All you have to do is admit it. If it's a bad policy, then change it. But don't mislead the committee. Do not mislead the committee.
That is Congressman Benny Thompson speaking with Kirstjen Nielsen, Secretary of Homeland Security Department, on Wednesday at a hearing. And she essentially just didn't want to admit that though they were cages, she kept referring to them as areas where children were being held. So essentially, Nora, I understand that when families are apprehended at the border, they are immediately put into these detention facilities that are cages, and then they may or may not be released, moved into shelters, etc., right? So there is a time when many of them go through these chain link boxes, right?
Yes. I don't know how to describe that as anything other than a cage. These semantic aerobics that they're going through. It's an area. It's an area that's closed off with a chain link fence, and you're sleeping on the floor with a Mylar blanket and a moldy burrito if you're lucky, while staff abuses run rampant. It boggles the mind how her department can be perpetrating this rampant abuse against these children and then deny the fact that they're in cages when we can see pictures of them in cages. I don't know how to process it.
Now, let's talk about the fact that the government claiming that it doesn't have resources to bring families together, then turns around and pours resources into spying on people. And your organization is also involved in this. So we found out recently, thanks to the work of an investigative media outlet, I believe it was a local NBC affiliate in San Diego, that found out that Customs and Border Protection Agency, which is under Homeland Security, was keeping a secret dossier of immigrant rights advocates, one lawyer, number of journalists, among them, I understand, a couple of, at least one of your colleagues, and essentially keeping tabs on them and even labeling some as instigators?
Yes. So there was a dossier that was recently leaked to this local affiliate in San Diego that had screenshots of a a secret database that the government is keeping on activists, attorneys, and journalists. My colleague, Nicole Ramos, was on the list. I am not sure if I'm on the list. I don't think that I am, but I do have an Interpol alert on my passport, and a month ago was detained and deported in Guadalajara by Mexican immigration officials.
You have an, wow, say that again. You have an Interpol warning on your passport?
So I have an Interpol alert on my passport. I'm unable to leave the United States. I found this out. I was going on a 3-day vacation to Guadalajara, and an alert popped up on my passport. It was a migratory alert. And so I was taken back into a room and interrogated for about an hour and a half about where I've lived, what languages I speak, how much money I had on me, if I'd had weapons training, if I had any weapons on me, and really, really hammered me about any kind of criminal proceedings pending against me in the United States. And at that time, and I'm not even trying to be funny, I had one unpaid parking ticket in the city of Los Angeles. So everybody was quite baffled as to why I had this. And I proceeded to be detained for almost 10 hours total with my child, and not given any access to food or water. And I have a severe degenerative disease and need to take medication. So the alert is, I was deported. The alert is still there. I can't leave the country to go anywhere or I'll be detained. And I'm just trying to deal with this as the new normal.
Wow. So you have no idea why? I mean, presumably it's because of the work you're doing with Al Otro Lado?
I've never been interrogated before. When I said, look, I think that this is why this happened, because my other colleague, Erica Pinheiro, also has an alert placed on her passport. So she's been detained multiple times and also does not have any pending criminal anything happening. So when I said to them, look, this happened to my colleague a couple of weeks ago. I work for a human rights organization. We have litigation pending against the government having to do with treatment of refugees. Then the two federal Mexican immigration officials said, oh, okay. And then it all became kind of clear to all of us, to the point where they even said, you have a right to have a consular or a consular official from your government here if you'd like. And I said to them, why on earth would I want a member of the same government that put the alert on me here? And they all laughed. So it was sort of this, like, you know, silent acknowledgement that it was definitely the U.S. behind this, because I had no, I mean, I've literally, like, I go to Mexico. I'm mostly based in Los Angeles with our programs here, and I work with people who've been deported out of prison in Mexico. So I'm probably there maybe 8 weekends a year. The main sort of as far as these databases, because there's not just the one that we saw the screenshots of. There are a couple of other separate lists, and some of them have been referenced in some reports that have been filed with the United Nations. But the thing that sort of that was the common thread with all of this were people that were involved in the caravan in terms of providing legal support, or journalists that were documenting conditions at the border. And I was in Los Angeles the whole time. This is also clearly retaliatory, but it really frustrates our work. It's terrifying. I really don't feel like I live in a democracy.
So your work as the legal director of Al Otro Lado has been criminalized without due process. You've been now essentially kept within the country, kept from traveling. I'm assuming you're legally challenging what's been done to you?
In the United States as well as in Mexico. You shouldn't be able to put out a writ. That's not what Interpol is for. It's not used as like a leash to try to keep me in the United States when all I'm trying to do is my job.
I mean, isn't Interpol, it's the international police. This is for like drug dealers and money launderers and people who are international criminals.
Yeah, I mean, the questions they were asking me, I wasn't even, that my answers sounded ridiculous. They were like, how much money do you have? And I said, $7.
Like, and I'm, you were with your daughter trying to go on vacation.
Right. And I have a severe medical condition. And every 2 hours, the officials would come in and say, we're bringing you food and water. And it got to a point where when they set up for maybe the fourth or fifth time, I said, just please stop. Like, I can't take my medication. You're like torturing me right now. Bad enough having to, they would come in and say, oh, the flight's going to leave at 6. So I was detained around midnight. And I'm just trying to keep it together so my kid feels safe. And then they came in, you know, 10 minutes before 6 a.m. and said, you know what, the flight's going to be at like 10:30. I got screamed at by a man with a gun when I asked, begged for a glass of water. It was one of the worst things that I've ever had to go through.
So what's next? I mean, so we have the situation where the government has wasted resources torturing people like yourself, torturing immigrants, separating families, ripping kids apart, traumatizing them, and then, you know, claiming they're at capacity, refusing to acknowledge the reality of what they've done, criminalizing the work of journalists, of advocates, of lawyers, of activists. And, you know, none of this is being made an issue. All we're told is we need billions of dollars for a border wall because there's crime flowing across the border. And most Americans who support President Trump refuse to see any of this. They are living on a completely different plane of reality. Is our only hope to wait for some kind of power shift at the White House?
I think that would be a start. I think people need to just stay as aware as they can. I mean, there are certain people that no matter how many facts you put in their face or video or anything, they're just not going to believe you. They don't. And there are people that I think, regardless of political affiliation, would see something like this and have the reaction, as people often do, to such high levels of trauma as refusing to acknowledge that it exists. Because if you do that, then the world is, you know, you realize how horrible this place can be. I think that we just need to keep pushing ahead with fighting back against these incredibly unconstitutional and undemocratic actions taken by the government. You can't just slap an Interpol alert on somebody because they sued you for violating the law. I think a change in administration is critical. I feel like the country's on fire, and it feels like a war. They're trying to break us. That's quite clear, and they've almost succeeded. I think it's also really galvanized the immigrant rights community to really, you know, to really unify so that when we do get a change in administration and we do have a more progressive Senate and Congress, I think we'll finally be at a place where we'll be able to get some actual meaningful immigration reform and have some time to reflect on how to even begin to attempt to rectify what has been done to these families. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think there's no way to fix what's been done. But
how can people support the work that you do? I'm assuming that you can accept financial donations, and
yeah,
you're a volunteer-run organization. You're trying to do so much with presumably very, very little.
Yeah, so we have staff now. We were volunteer only from about 2011 until 2016, 2017. But it's extremely difficult to manage volunteers when you're not even allowed to leave the country. So like Eric is not allowed to come in. I'm not allowed to leave. And our Los Angeles office is a very small hospital room, and we have a staff of 7. So it's just in LA. So it's very, very challenging resource-wise. We definitely need financial support. We're a 501c3, so donations are tax deductible. You can go to alotrolado.org and find out information on how to donate. We also need volunteers, not just attorneys. So the majority of our volunteers, which we are probably in the thousands now, it's this beautiful multidisciplinary group of people, attorneys, former teachers, social workers, art therapists. As long as you're nice and are ready to get your hands dirty, like, sign up. We don't even require Spanish fluency. We have all kinds of things that we need help with. So the Tijuana office right now is coordinating with anywhere from 50 to 100 volunteer attorneys per day. And I think that in the 100 days, I think this is the 101st day that we've had our on-the-ground program for that's also been co-run by Clinic, the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. I think that we have been able to provide Know Your Rights presentations to 2,000 refugees in 100 days.
Wow.
So we really need volunteers. There's been this really beautiful organic community that's sprung up at the border in response to this. So there's a medical clinic up and running. There's like an art center for the kids. We're just trying to make this brutally sad, terrifying experience for these families a little bit less horrible. The governments of the United States and Mexico don't want us to give people information about their legal rights, even using materials that the Department of Justice itself approved for use in facilities in the United States for Know Your Rights presentations. The thing that they did most recently that was so shocking is a few days ago, our volunteers were interrogated and almost detained by federal Mexican immigration officials. The reason for this is that we had been advising families to wear multiple layers of clothing, and because they're going to be placed in the hieleras, the ice boxes, which is the temporary holding space for CBP where people are held for anywhere between 24 hours and 5-6 days. And so because we'd been advising people to wear extra layers of clothing because of the cold, our volunteers were almost detained. So it's a level of cruelty that I just can't, as a human being, I can't even understand.
Give out a website where people can find out more about your work.
Yes, it's alotrolado.org. So it's alotrolado.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Nora, good luck to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Nora Phillips is legal director and co-founder of Al Otro Lado. We've been discussing a number of immigration-related stories. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.